Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 205. I'm Rob Wright, Security News Director at TechTarget, and I am here with security news writer Alex Khalafi. Alex, welcome.
Thanks, Rob.
How are you doing today?
Yesterday, I was telling my wife that I think we're done with snow for the season. And today, in a suburb of Boston, I'm looking at the largest snowflakes I've seen in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not great. Went from rain to snow. It's not looking good out there. We should note.
Yeah.
We should know we're recording this on Tuesday morning, March 14th. And it is indeed snowing in the greater Boston area. So.
And you know what? It's also precipitating is bad news in the world of cybersecurity.
Yes, it really is. Big breach or attack or something happened last week that shook the pillars of Washington, D.C. and the U.S. federal government. Mm-hmm. This put a scare into a lot of folks. We had a major breach at a public-private healthcare exchange in Washington, D.C., D.C. HealthLink, run by the D.C. Health Benefit Exchange? Yes, D.C. Health Authority. Benefit Exchange Authority. It's mm-hmm. a lot. We're just going to refer to it as D.C. HealthLink.
Yep.
But an insurance marketplace under, you know, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, that services folks in the D.C. area. And among those people, a lot of members of Congress and members
of families
and their families, congressional staff. And you know what? If it's if you have congressional staff in there, I'm sure you have a lot of other federal government folks in there as well. But let's not speculate. Let's not speculate.
We're going to do plenty of that in like 3 minutes.
Yeah. We'll get to the speculation later. Alex, tell us what you just wrote an update on this situation, which has gotten pretty interesting, but kind of walk the listeners through what has been going on.
So last Monday, I think it was March 6th, DC HealthLink became aware of a cyber attack. And we don't know exactly how they became aware of a cyber attack, but we do know that on March 6th, on a dark web sort of hacker forum, the health insurance data of 170,000 individuals went up for sale for an undisclosed amount of Monero. I forget if it was advertised at the time that it included members of Congress, but it was clearly DC HealthLink is what was clear through this posting.
Yes, that was on the post that was initially advertised, and mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was some sample data, and yes, yeah,
yep. Yep. Shortly after, some U.S. House of Representative members revealed that their personal health data, their families, and their staff members were compromised in a data breach against the exchange. As part of that whole hullabaloo, DC HealthLink did confirm quietly to press that they were investigating an ongoing incident. And then Friday, DC HealthLink actually put out their public-facing statement that sort of disclosed everything they were willing to share. And that's this past Friday. They said that 56,415 customers of their health exchange were affected, which if we were to connect dots here, customers could refer to policyholders, which would pretty well line up with 170,000 individuals being compromised. And on their website, at least a few years ago, And it's still up there now. DC HealthLink said that they represent approximately 100,000 people. You could see how that could grow to 170,000, which makes you wonder if it's just all of their customers. But anyways, I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Compromised data included customer names, social security numbers, dates of birth, genders, health plan information, employer information, enrollee information. Not every single one of these people lost every single one of these data fields, but these were the people who had data affected, 56,415 customers in some layout. And this is the data that affected some. People were, each person was affected by some or all of these data fields. Anyways, DC HealthLink said it would reach out to affected enrollees and it would offer 3 years of credit and identity monitoring for all three major credit bureaus. That would extend to the families, that would extend to the enrolled dependents, the spouses, the children of affected customers, as well as the customers who were not directly affected by the breach. Although, once again, you have to question what that exact percentage looks like. And then they said their services are running normally and they will continue to operate in a state of heightened alert. So that's where we were at Monday. And and one of the, a little bit of the flavor of that story was me sort of talking about how was this a cloud breach that happened through AWS? We did find some case studies saying that DC HealthLink switched from commercial off the shelf sort of infrastructure to open source, no license fee, as and facilitated by AWS. So we were like, could this be a S3 bucket thing? We were sort of like running through the possibilities in our head a bit. But
sure,
last night, first reported by CyberScoop, a user on the same dark web hacking forum that, you know, sold or attempted to sell this health data, a different user under the alias Denfer, who claimed to be friends with Intel Broker, who was the original seller of the data from 170,000 individuals. They published a thread claiming to want to clear up misinformation about the breach, saying that news media got it wrong. Here's what actually happened.
And so nice of them. So nice of them.
So nice of them. Denfer said that the breach happened as a result of an open exposed database that required no verification whatsoever to connect to, which was sort of the worst case scenario you were talking about, like over Slack yesterday. Denfer also said that to our estimates, which refers to Denfer and Intel Broker, or it's all one guy maybe, or woman, who knows, the database was most likely exposed for over a year and a half before the breach occurred. This is Denfer's unproven assertion. And then this morning, as of this recording, Tuesday, I reached out to DC HealthLink. I'm like, hey, here's a screen cap of this. What do you think? But the spokesperson just declined and they said, here's our latest statement, shared the Friday statement, and then said, we'll share anything else as it comes up. And I'm guessing, so they said they engaged Mandiant. I'm guessing Mandiant's having a field day if this is what's going on right now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to read too much into that statement, or that response, rather, with the spokesperson just sort of re-upping the same statement as.
Never. Because this is. They were never going to be like, yeah, we had exposed databases.
Sure.
Here you go, tech target.
Sure.
It's more, that was more just, hey, we did ask and they said nothing.
Yeah. I will note that they did respond. I think it was whenever the first report started coming out, whoever I think was it Reuters, AP, apologies to whoever was first to zero in on the letters that were going back and forth about this breach amongst Congress, members of Congress. that were first to get there. I think that they reached out to DC HealthLink, and the spokesperson confirmed to members of the press that there was some type of breach, but you know, didn't say anything beyond that until we got the statement. Like you said, I think it was Friday evening that it went out with a little bit more details about the 50,000 or whatever it was affected mm-hmm. individuals. There's a lot to unpack with this. I guess this vector, purported vector, makes sense. If you line everything up, if you look mm-hmm. at this and you say the post went up on March 6th, DC HealthLink first became aware of the post on March 6th. There are no details in that statement that they published Friday evening about technical details that would suggest it was like a network breach, that an intruder got inside the network or whatever. You know, they call it a breach. They said breach update. But other than that, I suppose it just could be, as easily have been a data exposure, you know, right. A misconfigured cloud resource. It doesn't even have to be an Amazon S3 bucket. I mean, we know that for some time they were on AWS. It's possible that was changed, or that certain resources were moved off of AWS and this particular resource is somewhere else. And that was misconfigured. Who knows? We don't know. But it certainly lines up with the circumstantial evidence or information that we have thus far, because this all unfolded very quickly. And if it is a misconfigured cloud resource, regardless of whether it's AWS S3 bucket, I mean, accidental data exposures happen on all types of platforms, databases, sure. etc. You know, it's not just AWS. And AWS has done a lot, you know, going back all the way to 2018, I think, was when they moved S3 buckets to default by, non-public, private by default. I think it was 2018, either late 2018 or early 2019. I should know this because I just looked at it, but regardless. maybe they announced it in late 2018, started to roll out in 2019. Regardless, it's not a good look. It's not a good look. It's not a good look for the exchange. It's not a good look for whatever organizations or cloud provider platform, et cetera, they're using. This is a huge unforced error if it's an open exposed database, as Denver claimed. And again, these guys are hackers, and we have no reason to take them at their word. They're cyber criminals. I mean, hackers, you know, apologies to the hackers out there. These guys are crooks. And you know, the only thing we have to verify that they're being on the level here is the fact that the data has been reviewed by a number of folks out there and has been determined to be authentic. So, and both of these individuals, I guess, published samples of this data. So they appear, you're probably right. They're probably the same person. Who knows? We don't know, but yeah, it's not good. And it'll be interesting to see. I mean, so what do you do here? I mean, who's at fault? Without knowing the particulars of the specific cloud provider or cloud resource, or if there was a misconfiguration, how it was misconfigured. But if you have a hacker coming out, Alex, and saying, we just pwned thousands of members of, you know, Congress, congressional staff, family members, et cetera, government. I'm sure there are other government, hopefully not, you know, DOD, CIA, Pentagon, whatever. But I mean, would you be surprised for that to happen? Like, it's just, I don't know. I mean, I guess ultimately the fault lies on the end user organization, I guess.
That's the big question for everything involving a cyber attack like this, right, is whose fault is it? And it's like, oh, it's the threat actor, right? Of course, obviously, definitely, of course. But if it's as Denver said, and it was a database that didn't even require any kind of verification or even a login of some kind to access, it doesn't really matter at a certain point whose fault it is, because 170,000 human beings lost personal data potentially.
At least 50,000 and maybe 170. Yeah, as you said.
And my guess was the customer thing is them sort of gently obfuscating the numbers a little bit. That's sort of the big question. And it makes me think of the Biden security stuff that came out a few weeks ago.
Yes.
And the big aspect of that whole 30-something page report that we keep going back to is the software liability thing. Who's liable? And I think that may have actually been the topic of 204, the last episode of Rest and Repeat.
Yes, it was.
And I know that DC HealthLink isn't a software manufacturer, but it's situations like this theoretical one, to be clear, still theoretical.
Yep.
That is the reason why the liability stuff should maybe exist in the first place.
Yeah, it's and I'll be honest with you, when we were discussing the software liability, I mean that National Cybersecurity Strategy document even spells out that it's not just software, it's services. I mean, I didn't even really sort of consider the sort of misconfiguration issues and you know, things like that for cloud resources. And again, I'll just say, you know, AWS, they've done a lot to fix the situation. I mean, this started happening way back in 2016, 2017. And I think at a certain point, AWS leadership realized that this was an ongoing problem, and it wasn't just something that a few customers were screwing up, that there was something that needed to be done that was a little bit more proactive, and good for them. And we talked, Ariel and I, Ariel Waldman, our colleague at TechTarget Security, she and I spoke with Amazon Chief Security Officer Steve Schmidt a few months ago, back during, I guess it was their AWS Reinforce show here in Boston. And you know, we talked about that. Like, we talked about, hey, you know, you guys did a lot, but is this still an issue? And why do you think it's an issue? And it sort of touched in with a lot of what Steve had talked about regarding prescriptive security and being more proactive and things like that. And I think they know. I think they knew that, like, customers are going to screw things up occasionally, that this stuff is inherently complex, and that if stuff is easily misconfigured, then you got to do something as a provider to make it less easy. Mm-hmm. And that's not just sort of blocking public access by default, but making it crystal clear when you change certain rules and you tweak things that you're not, like, removing permissions and authentication requirements and just broadcasting data to the public, because that was happening. That happened to a lot of organizations. That happened to Verizon. It happened to, I believe, DOD contractor. It happened to just, you know, there was a run of stories way back before you joined us, Alex, in 2016, 2017, and even 2018, where it just seemed like there were a lot of high profile data exposures like that. So I was thinking about this yesterday, and we had this discussion offline with some colleagues, and it's like, I don't think this is going to be a good look. If they're still on AWS and this is an S3 misconfiguration, I don't think this is a great look for AWS. It could be a bleep storm for them or for whatever cloud provider. And you know, discussing it further, I'm like, maybe I have that wrong. Maybe at a certain point, like without knowing the particulars of, like I said, the specific settings and the specific cloud resource and how things might have gotten screwed up. At a certain point, I do think it's incumbent on the organization to know what they're doing when they move stuff to, you know, to cloud resources.
Mm-hmm.
To various cloud instances, to web apps, anything that could be publicly exposed on the internet, the public internet, the clear net. I mean, there's a certain responsibility that is inherent for those customers. Now, if it turns out it was AWS and there's something that we don't know about that got screwed up along the way, it doesn't reflect great on AWS, especially when you consider those case studies and the awards they got from AWS years ago, you know, best practices for DC HealthLink and, you know, moving to the cloud and all that, and you know, using AWS and servicing all these customers is great. But like for something like this, again, for an unforced error this size, it's just a bad look for at least the organization itself, you know, for the authority, if not the whatever cloud provider or third party they're using. And, you know, we'll see. Hopefully that will be ironed out at some point. Alex, I want to ask you about the congressional side of this for a second. You know,
sure.
Just sort of the panic about the data. And, you know, a lot of the news coverage of this has been, well, this is putting, you know, the public officials, it's putting them and their family members in danger of not just cyber risk, but, you know, physical risks, I guess, because the addresses and all that, you know, that somebody, some crazy person could show up at someone's house and, you know, then you have another Paul Pelosi situation or something like that. But I think it's worth discussing that, like, one of the letters that went out, I think it was, I'm trying to remember who it was now, and I'll see if I can conjure the name. But one of the letters was going around to members of Congress, I believe, to McCarthy, the House Speaker, said that the FBI, vetted the data and actually purchased a copy of the data. What do you think about that? It's a little strange.
I don't think so. I don't think so, because I did a lot of sort of reading and stuff into the dark web. Like when I was doing a really long article about it a couple years ago.
Yep.
And one of the more interesting things I stumbled upon, which isn't exactly related to cybersecurity, but I think it's still relevant, is that law enforcement regularly engages in aggressive sting operations in order to shut stuff down. Mm-hmm. For example, it is not unheard of for national law enforcement to infiltrate websites where there's, let's say, illicit content, mm-hmm. of certain kinds,
mm-hmm.
stay in there for a few weeks, get all of the names and sort of people that they can, and get everything they need to shut certain vile places down, and then they do it.
Yep.
It doesn't feel good to see the FBI give Monero a secure cryptocurrency to a threat actor of some kind, but is this what's necessary in order to get a hold of that data and then maybe at some point bring them to justice? Like, it's, and I don't have a good answer to any of the questions that these sorts of sting operations come from or lead to. But it is complicated, and it is a thing that happens. So it's not a thing that surprises me, is, I guess, my best answer to your question.
Yeah. I just thought it was a little weird on one hand for the FBI and the feds in general to basically say, don't negotiate with cyber criminals. Don't pay for your data. Don't pay the ransoms. Don't be extorted. Report the incident to us and we'll help you. And we'll, you know, do our best to recover whatever, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, work with us and don't pay. For them to turn around and just sort of immediately be like, well, they have, you know, I'm projecting here, but well, they've got members of Congress, so we got to pay for this data and get it off the web. I don't know. It seems a little, I don't want to say two-faced, but it seems a little, it goes against, I guess, the,
it feels funny.
Yeah. It goes against the previous sort of ethos of the feds on this one. And it's interesting because, I think you're kind of in a pickle here if you're the FBI, because you do have a responsibility to protect people. And if you think they're going to be in danger because of this, I guess you got to try to do something. But at the same time, like, what's to say that this, I mean, there's sample data out there right now on that forum, you know? So whoever stole the data and then sold it to the FBI, maybe that's why, I don't know, maybe that had something to do with Intel broker getting banned. Who knows? But even if that data was sold, it doesn't look like it's closed off any, you know, sort of further opportunity for that data to be spilled, sold, exposed, published. I mean, I don't know.
I'm not, obviously it's not beyond the government to be two-faced, right? It's, sure. It's not, it's, and I don't want to go to bat for the government or law enforcement or whatever. And in my capacity is trying to talk about this, you know, mostly entirely journalistically, whatever. But how else does the FBI get that data today? Right. Yeah. Yeah. It, not today, but I mean today, March 6th, March 7th. Do they, like, I don't, I would imagine that given that it's a Tor site where everyone's anonymous and they're asking for Monero, so it's not necessarily the easiest thing in the world to track. It's not impossible for me, as someone who's not a security expert in like the way that, you know, someone from Mandiant or Sophos might be. Sure. It's hard for me to imagine how else the FBI verifies that data unless someone else leaked it for free or they buy it themselves. And I agree that it feels funny and you're probably right that it's two-faced to some extent, but I don't know how else. Like, would the alternative be sitting on their thumbs and wait for a way to more ethically do it? And that, I'm very unsettled about how I feel about that. But I'm inclined to say that maybe there was no better way than this.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. And I suppose if there's something about how they made this purchase that allowed them to obtain more information about the particular threat actor, mm-hmm. and identifying that individual, then you could say, well, maybe it was worth it. You know, we'll see. Too soon to tell. This story is obviously unfolding. Sure. We're barely a week out from, you know, the initial hack / breach / exposure. So there's going to be more to come on this one, but for now, that's it.
That's it.
That's where we're at. Could be a data exposure, and if so, can be a lot of questions about how an unforced error of that magnitude happens. So, but Alex, thank you for joining me on the pod as usual to discuss big news.
Oh, anytime.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Tech Target Security and the Risk and Repeat podcast. I'm Rob Wright, and we'll see you next time.